Hello again, and welcome back to the Ostrich Technique. Chris, it's been a little bit of a break, but how are you doing, man?
Doing all right. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. You know, sorry to our listeners if you've been waiting for a podcast for a while. You know, we've been on quite a bit of a break between life stuff and, you know, prepping more episodes, but we promise we have more episodes coming soon. But we are recording today because a pretty important movie came out, Chris. Do you want to tell the fans what that is?
Yeah, it is Captain America Brave New World.
No, it's not, Chris. It's we did not record a mini episode for Brave New World. Kind of a, you know, middling movie. I think we can just say that that was our reactions overall. But Thunderbolts did come out this weekend, and we have a lot of thoughts on it. So we figured it was ripe time to record a mini episode. And not only that, Chris, we're, I think, for the first time recording this in the same room.
Yes, yes, we are.
So that's I think, pretty exciting. So, yeah, let's just dive right into it, Chris. I mean, the MCU is in, I think, a pretty interesting spot, you know, all things considered. What were your sort of thoughts going into it? You know, the MCU, where did you think it really needed this movie? Do you think they were cooked if this one didn't do well?
We have been in a very back and forth MCU where it goes, oh, this is a hit. Oh, this movie or project is not great. Oh, we're back. Oh, we're cooked.
Yeah.
So we're still in that phase of Marvel. And with Brave New World being the previous film, like you said, was middling, just according to the pattern, the trend, it would seem Thunderbolts would have been one of the better ones. And I think leading up to this film, it definitely started getting a lot of hype, especially with the trailers. It actually looked like it had a distinct flavor to it, and it looked like it actually may be good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say when Thunderbolts was first announced, it was definitely not at the top of my watch list. It was more of like, why are we watching sort of this B-list level of Avengers or like a Suicide Squad, essentially?
Yeah.
But they definitely proved me wrong, and I do think it was definitely a needed addition to the MCU, especially in this point of Marvel.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's also interesting, Chris, I don't know if you saw, there's a Wall Street Journal article that came out last night about the state of the MCU, where things are. And I think internally and definitely externally amongst the fans, there's been an understanding that the MCU is in a bit of a rough spot between the quality level being very inconsistent, like you said. It's been the sort of we're so over and we're so back sort of cycle that we've had. And now Brave New World was a bit of a disappointment, but I think we talked about this many times before the movie had come out, that this the trailers for this felt a little bit different. There was a little bit more of like intention. It seemed like they were confident going into this movie with where things were. And coming out of it, I think we ended up with a really strong, positive movie. And I think, like you said, it was something that the MCU needed. They needed not just this movie, but they needed a win, because they need to win back trust of the fans ahead of Avengers Doomsday. And quite frankly, there's very little of that right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is one good step for them overall, but now we have to, you know, I think what you and I were talking about also separately was that we need three, I think, wins for the MCU to officially be, you know, back in the swing of things, you know, because we've had like isolated wins here and there, Spider-Man No Way Home, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, but then it's surrounded by, mediocrity is a strong word, but
a lot of disappointments for sure.
Definitely disappointments. Yeah. So I'm very happy to report, at least, that I really like this movie, and I think you also like this movie based on our discussion. You know, so why don't we jump into some spoiler-free thoughts for the first little bit of this discussion, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be tough because there are, I mean, you know, I guess this isn't like super-duper spoiler-heavy, but as a movie, like there are things we can talk about, I think, in broad strokes. But what, Chris, what did you like about this movie?
I think what stood out the most and what we talked about right after seeing the movie together was it really focused on the characters themselves, which then allowed there to be such a very heavy topic that is handled or covered in this movie. And I think if we had a movie that was really like, I don't know, true super human super powerful beings, a lot of the focus would have been shifted to their power sets and how they're using the powers in battle, where this is much more grounded in reality, that it allowed us to talk about much more human problems and human stories.
Yeah, I 100% agree. This was, I think, one of our complaints, if you guys go back and listen to our The Marvels episode, where we have a discussion about why the MCU is in the state that it is. One of the things I think we talked about was the fact that characters have been a focus for phases 1 through 3, and it really became less of a focus. It really became about the sort of overarching multiverse plan that they had, which fans really weren't
zero plan, actually.
I mean, it feels like there was zero plan, but I mean, to give Marvel some grace, there was obviously the pandemic that really threw all of their plans up in the air, because of like they'd set out this plan in 2019, and then they couldn't have predicted the pandemic would have happened.
And then Kang kind of
fizzled out because they just didn't develop him well. And it was
Jonathan Majors stuff.
Yes.
Didn't help.
Yeah. Jonathan Majors stuff didn't help either. That's true. But I think overall, the position that Marvel was in, they forgot what made them, you know, so dominant in the first place, is we actually cared about all of these characters going in. And they had an uphill battle here for sure, where, I mean, a lot of these characters were from B-list movies, from B-list shows, where people didn't really care about. I mean, like Ghost, Ant-Man and the Wasp, I mean, smaller movie, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, definitely not one of their strongest showings in terms of shows, even though it was
Black Widow too.
Yeah, Black Widow. I mean, this is almost like a proto Black Widow sequel in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, it has three characters from Black Widow. It has, you know, Taskmaster, Red Guardian, and Yelena.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that worked out. But again, really strong focus on characters, and it ended up turning out, I think, really well.
Yeah.
No, so well taken, Chris. Anything else that you want to talk about here that you liked?
There is, but I want to hear some of your thoughts first.
Okay. Yeah, I think for me, what I really liked was this movie felt like it had something to say. It felt like for the first time, there was actually a story that wasn't like the characters sort of being strung along to, like, you know, get the story from point A to point B and to set up the things that you need to for the multiverse. But, and granted, there is, you know, some of those things where very clearly there are things that they're setting up for future movies, but it felt earned within the story, and it was a complete story in and of itself. Like, this was not something that, like, was unresolved and there was, you know, a hanging thread at the end of the movie that they want us to tease for the next thing. And, you know, there's some of that in the post-credit scene, which we'll talk about in the spoiler section. But this is a complete story where the characters have their own arc, and they have, you know, a start, middle, and end. And I think in that aspect, it works effectively. And it's like I said, it was trying to tell something in terms of its theme. It really deals with mental health in a really interesting way. I'm sure you've heard that from a lot of the reviews. But I think it's a really, you know, it's an admirable attempt to try and do something a little bit different with Marvel. And I think in that sense, talking about these sorts of themes makes it the darkest Marvel and more serious Marvel movie that we've had in a very, very long time. I mean, obviously Guardians is a pretty serious movie, but I feel like you and I sort of consider that like its own sort of thing, because James Gunn is really operating in his own sort of like bubble with the Guardians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Going back to the characters, I think, at least for me personally, Yelena was definitely a standout character in the Black Widow movie.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think they did a really great job of capitalizing on Yelena's character, or, you know, Florence Pugh in general, making her very much the heart and soul of this team and of the movie.
Yeah.
I also really enjoyed that, like you said, there are a lot of B-list characters from B-list movies or just projects. And they really changed my mind about them, or at least helped me understand some of these characters a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's not really a spoiler, but for example, like, I was not the biggest fan of Falcon and Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. I think with a lot of people, John Walker was a character who I disliked a lot. And I think Wyatt Russell portrayed him that way very well. And I think in this movie, they've written John's character significantly better. And I think even Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Even Ghost. Ghost has more personality here. Would I've liked to see a little bit more about Ghost? Sure. But I think the dynamic between the team really shines with their, really brings out each of their personalities. And like going back to what you're saying, gives each character a little arc, gives each character a little something to do. So again, we go back to the characters, and that's really what this movie felt like, a self-contained movie that really focused on the arcs of each of these characters, and it all made sense.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's a great character study, just like how some of the really good Phase 2 and 3 MCU movies were, and what Marvel has sorely been lacking. And to the point that we were that I mentioned in terms of James Gunn, this sort of feels like older Marvel movies in that it is its own sort of separate story, but it has, you know, a little bit of threads to like the broader MCU, where, I mean, I think really since Spider-Man No Way Home, this is like the first time we've had like a Marvel movie that actually feels like it's part of like the MCU. Again, unlike Guardians,
which is very separate.
Separate, its own thing. So, yeah, I think those are well-founded. I'm trying to think of another positive here. I think one thing that I also really liked was that it didn't look and feel like, you know, the standard sort of Marvel movie with like the gray cinematography or like the music just being sort of kind of generic. Like, I really liked the score in this one, and the cinematography is actually really good. I really liked the way that it looked. It had its own distinct style to it, which is interesting, because then when we get to the post-credit scene, which again we will discuss, you could very clearly tell the difference between the individuals who directed, you know, the main movie, which is Jake Schreier, and then the post-credit scene, who was directed by a different director. So yeah, I really like the way that this movie looked. And to that point also, the action. I thought the action was also really good in this movie. It was really inventive, because like you said, this is a very narrow skill set of individuals where like they're punching, kicking, shooting, and they sort of make that joke in the trailer as well. And they use their powers in, I think, effective and unique ways that makes them visually interesting and not just the same thing over and over again. So yeah. Chris, any other thoughts? What are maybe some things you didn't like about this movie, if anything?
I think one of the biggest things, which we've talked to, I brought up to you separately, was I felt like some characters kind of got a little bit of a backseat, and I would have liked their backstories to be explored a little bit more. Now, granted, all these characters are not brand new characters, and so we do have backstories from the previous projects that they were in.
Right.
But some characters' backstories were expanded upon even more in this, and some were maybe just touched on, but like really not explored in the grand scheme of things, in the grand scheme of the film.
Yeah.
And so I would have liked to maybe see a little bit more of an equal distribution, but I do understand the movie has a certain runtime, has a certain pacing, and had those been included, it may have felt a little bit dragging.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just from a pure fan or curiosity perspective, I would have liked to see a little bit more about the backstories of some of our Thunderbolts.
Yeah. I think that that's a well-founded point. I think, you know, we were discussing this afterwards, that I think on one hand, I understand why they chose the characters that they did to focus on. But on the other hand, it would have been nice to see a little bit more on, because again, these are B-list characters who are, you know, secondary, tertiary characters within the movies that they were, shows that they were in. And being able to get a little bit more about them would have been, I think, beneficial to them. But I think to your point, when we were talking about some of the pros of the movie, we still get endeared to them. I think they still do a good job of making them more relatable and more interesting characters that I'm invested in seeing where they go next, whoever ends up, you know, making it to the end of the movie. So yeah, I'm trying to think of if there's anything that I had problems with. I think maybe one thing that we didn't maybe discuss as much was, I think Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, Valentina, was a little bit one note.
Yes.
Like, there are aspects of her where she's trying the showmanship, and there's like a lot of elements where she's clearly trying to mirror Tony Stark in some things. Like, there's one scene in the beginning where there's a hearing, and she very much mirrors Tony Stark in that approach, where she's talking to the congressman, and then she starts talking to the press with a similar level of bravado that Tony Stark has, but obviously it's hard to match RDJ's magnetism and charisma. But I think for the most part, she kind of plays like a conniving bad guy. And that really does, and that's really the sort of entire tone that she has throughout the movie. There's not like complexity there. We have like one scene where we get a little bit more about her backstory, but it doesn't really tie into explaining why she maybe is the way that she is. So I think there could have been a little bit more about Valentina, given her a little bit more complexity. I do hope we get to see more, though.
I mean, I think we will.
I think so, too. I mean, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, she's a great actress. I think there are some good moments that she has, but it was definitely a bit of a disappointment where we could have seen a little bit more of her.
Mm-hmm.
But any other final thoughts on our spoiler-free section, Chris, before we jump into spoiler talk?
Yeah, and I think we'll expand upon this during the spoiler talk. But the only other real disappointment or something I would have liked to have seen more of was the final villain fight, if you will.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the way that they did it.
Yeah.
But from a superhero perspective, I would have liked to see a little bit more of the power set being displayed. I think we got a little scene here.
Yeah.
And then another scene there. But I mean, it definitely made you feel afraid of the villain.
Yeah, about for sure.
The capacity or the potential the villain has. But I don't think we saw very much of it. And I would have liked to at least see a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we will more in the future.
I think so. I mean, we talked about this, but I mean, the idea that this is a group of individuals who can punch, kick, and shoot, basically, given the power level of this villain, I think they had to, you know, keep him a little bit toned back in terms of what they could do. Otherwise, it would be a bit too unrealistic that they could actually, you know, band together and win the day. Yeah, exactly. So, but I get where you're coming from. I think it would have been cool to see a little bit more of that character, but I do think we are going to get more of that as we go on. But yeah, I don't think I have any more thoughts. Any final thoughts from you, Chris, from Spoiler Free?
No, let's move on to the spoilers.
All right. You've been warned, guys. We're going to jump into the spoiler section here. So if you haven't seen the movie, firstly, what are you doing? Why are you listening to this mini episode? Go watch Thunderbolts.
Well, if they want to hear the spoiler free.
Well, you know, some people like to hear the spoiler free and spoiler thoughts, but, you know, go watch Thunderbolts and then come back. And then you can hear the next part of our conversation here. But we're going to count down. So here's your final warning. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The new Avengers. Chris. Spoiler thoughts now. Are there any things you'd like to elaborate on your pros here in spoiler terms?
Sure. In terms of pros, we'll go back to how this film tackled mental health, depression, bipolar, all of that, I think was done really delicately and really well. And using Bob as that conduit to tackle that subject, I think was smart, because the character in the comics himself is one that is, I guess, two beings in one body.
Yes.
And has this sort of dual dynamic where one's for good, one's for evil. How do you deal with those voices? And I think Lewis Pullman did a phenomenal job in portraying that. And like you said, right after the movie, it really felt like every scene he was in, he was on like the razor's edge.
Yeah.
And you could tell he was trying to hold something back, obviously from the trailers and just knowing about the comics, you knew his darker personality, or I guess in the comics it's a little bit different, but the Void, the evil persona.
Yeah.
We knew that's what he was trying to hold back.
Right.
So, but still, you could still tell, like, he's holding something back. We don't really know to what extent, from at least the movie's perspective. And I think the acting between him and Florence Pugh, I think the chemistry was really, really great. They had very good chemistry, especially, you know, in those more serious scenes. And I think I guess I didn't really talk about this in the non-spoiler section, but the comedy was perfectly timed, in my opinion. I don't think jokes ran on too long. I don't think they were too laugh out loud or, you know, slapstick.
Yeah.
And, you know, we credit that a lot to Red Guardian and Alexei, and his relationship with Yelena, I think, was done very, very well as well. I think those two relationships really drive the movie. And, you know, Yelena is the center. So, like I said, very much the heart and soul of the team and art and of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think it was a very smart move to position this film around Yelena.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. I think one of the things that we didn't talk about, again, in the spoiler-free section, was a pro of this movie was Bob, for sure. Bob / Sentry. He was really, really well portrayed. Lewis Pullman. I mean, I know we also talked about this. It's hard to see how Steven Yeun, who was supposedly in talks to play this role, would have done as good a job as Lewis Pullman. Not that Steven Yeun is not a talented actor in any way. He definitely is, but I think, like you said, from what I said, is that Lewis Pullman's performance is really, really nuanced in a way that I don't think we've seen in a Marvel character, or especially a Marvel villain, in a very, very long time. And, I mean, we were also having this discussion afterwards when he comes down as Sentry in the Sentry outfit with, like, the blue and the gold and all of that stuff. You can tell his performance is a little bit different there than just Bob.
Yeah.
Where it almost feels like in that Sentry costume, he was the Void already, even though he wasn't, like, in the full blackness and, you know, turning people in the shadows there. And it's really subtle, but, like, I think you can tell that he is more unhinged and a little bit more, like, yeah, there's definitely a darkness to him in that version that you don't see when he is Bob earlier in the movie in his pajamas, basically. So I think that aspect of it was really, really well portrayed. And to your point earlier, Alexei, I mean, you heard me laughing out loud a bunch of times during the movie with Alexei. I mean, he was hilarious. I think the comedy was placed in the right places. It wasn't overbearing like in some of the more recent Thor movies, where it was like jokes that felt like they were almost undercutting some of the drama that they were trying to talk about. And it really felt like it was a good moments of levity that balanced out definitely the more serious tone of this movie.
Yep.
So, yeah. What else would you like to discuss, Chris? Any other spoiler thoughts here?
I think everybody has the same thought about this, but they did Taskmaster so dirty. Two total lines across two MCU movies, and that's the run of the character.
8 words. I think that's what someone on Reddit said. She had 8 words that she said.
So, I'm like, a lot of people are theorizing this is probably Marvel's way of acknowledging they made a bad choice for the character and are just getting rid of this iteration of the character quickly. And people are hoping that we will have a more comic accurate
Taskmaster
iteration down the line.
Yeah.
Which I would also like, because I think Taskmaster is a very interesting character, very different than what, you know, we saw in Black Widow and the, like, what, 5 or less minutes in Thunderbolts. So
5 is generous. It's probably like a minute and a half of her.
Yeah. So I don't know. It was definitely a decision in Black Widow to portray Taskmaster the way they did.
Yeah.
And it's sad that Taskmaster is gone
pretty unceremoniously.
I don't know how her helmet is not bulletproof, but apparently a bullet can stop her.
Yeah.
So, but otherwise, that entire scene in the vault. I think action, very great. Again, I think it's because it's a lot of a hand-to-hand combat. You know, all these heroes don't really have projectile moves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the hand-to-hand was really great. And because each of the different assassins had targets of the other assassin, where it was just the square or this circle of, oh, I'm targeting you. Oh, well, my target is actually this person. Well, my target's actually this person. Well, so I think that worked really well because each character was not going 1v1. Okay, I'm going up against my target. It was more of I'm targeting the person who's targeting this person who's targeting you.
Yeah.
So it was a nice little like circle going on.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like, you know, Yelena was fighting Walker and Ghost. And I mean, they kind of were at some points because they were like trying to get them separated so that they could actually get their target. But I think it speaks to the inventive nature of the fight. And they used their power sets, I think, pretty well, too. Like,
yes.
They, especially like Ghost coming in and out, I thought they did really effectively. Walker using a shield, I think, in pretty interesting ways. I mean, maybe not as interesting as Cap. And then obviously Yelena doing her Black Widow sort of move. So I think across the board, it was a really interesting fight for sure. And it speaks to the nature. I mean, even later on when they have, there's a later on fight that they also have, which I thought was also pretty well done, I would say. So yeah, I would agree. I think that all of that is well-founded. I'm trying to think another positive here, or just in general spoiler thoughts. Well, it's interesting that, you know, they bought that Valentina got Avengers Tower. I mean, that's been the real question that we've had since
Spider-Man Homecoming, right?
Yeah, 2017. It's been 8 years since we've been speculating who is getting Avengers Tower, and it ends up being Valentina. What are your thoughts on that? Do you like that Valentina bought Avengers Tower?
I think it's fine. I think the way the story plays out, it makes sense when we're going back to the source material, just because the Sentry Watchtower happened to also be overlapping the, I guess, Stark Tower or Avengers Tower in the comics.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a whole story about how Bob was accidentally, or I guess purposely, whatever you want to say, he was cloaking it, and so it actually appeared overlaying each other. So it makes sense from a comics perspective.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like, I'm pretty indifferent. Like, it would have been cool to have had a more significant character.
Yeah.
Or group purchase Avengers Tower, but
right.
I'm neutral.
Yeah.
On this.
Yeah, I guess fair enough. You know, I think one thing that we talked about it in the spoiler-free section, which I think is fair to talk about now, is the end credit scene, not the mid credits. The mid credit scene was just like a sort of fun.
Oh, that was really fun with Alexi, though.
Yeah, with Alexi trying to really pose that he's the guy on the Wheaties box, and the woman just did not care at all. That was very funny. But the end credit scene, one. So what I was mentioning earlier, you can tell that it was directed by two different people. If you haven't read already, the end credit scene was directed by the Russo brothers, and you can just tell by the way that it's lit and shot that it feels very Russo brothers. Which, you know, mixed opinions on it. I will say, I don't think this movie it has me hyped for Fantastic Four, but I think Fantastic Four really feels like its own sort of separate movie in its own standalone universe. But I'm still a little bit anxious about Doomsday and how that's going to turn out, especially given the Russo's more recent track record post Endgame. And I think you would agree with that it's, you know, they're on a little bit of a downturn. So I'm hoping that Doomsday does well, but there's a lot of things working against Doomsday that it will be interesting to see how they are able to pull it off, if at all. But interesting setup. And I think this goes back to one of the things that we also talked about earlier, in that the end credit, I mean, most of the end credit scenes from Phase 4 and 5 have not really panned out. They've all been teasing larger things that haven't really happened. And for the first time in a very long time, we've had a post-credits teaser that actually teases the very next movie, which is Fantastic Four. What do you think of the post-credits scene, Chris?
I agree. It's the first significant post-credit that we've had in a while. And
hey, man, what about the Marvels? We got Beast. He's come back in Doomsday.
That's true. But it felt something that was, okay, we are going to see this years down the road where, you said, it literally teases the very next project in a few months.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And like you were telling me, that really makes it feel like sort of like the old school phase one Marvel movies where we would get, for example, which movie is it where they see Mjolnir in New Mexico and the very next movie that comes out is
Iron Man 2.
It's Iron Man 2. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like the, and like with, I guess, yeah, just the phase one Marvels, they would tease in the post credits the exact next movie coming out. Mm-hmm. And this did exactly that, which was really great. And again, Alexi showing up in basically a tracksuit of just completely branded
Avengers with a Z.
Yeah. And like trying to, yeah, the copyrights and everything.
Yeah.
But we also get some insights into the current state of the Avengers, which is 14 months after the Thunderbolts movie, where Sam Wilson does not like Val's, new Avengers. And it seems like there's going to be two different factions of Avengers, with the Thunderbolts now dubbed the new Avengers and then Sam Wilson's Avengers. So it'll be very interesting to see how these two Avenger groups come together in Doomsday.
Yeah. It's an interesting place for sure, especially I think it was characterized by Bucky's. They kept talking to Bucky about, did you talk to Sam about him? What did Sam say? Because they all very clearly know that Sam and Bucky have this really deep relationship with one another. Obviously, we had a whole series where we talked about it. And maybe the best part of Brave New World was the scene where Bucky happens to show up and talk to Sam. So they clearly, they're very good friends. They have a lot of rapport. So they were clearly hoping that they were not going to get pushback from Sam, but they literally talk about them going into a copyright war about the name Avengers,
yes,
which is so funny, but it makes sense. I mean, obviously Sam represents the OG original group of Avengers, which we don't really know the status of the regular Avengers apart from, Sam is probably an Avenger, Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, a couple of them. We can imply that they are Falcon. Still, yeah, the new Falcon, Joaquin. But, beyond that, we don't really know what the real Avengers status is. So it's interesting that Valentina, very serendipitously happens to capitalize on this vacuum of Avengers and make the new Avengers. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing we also didn't talk about is the fact that she announces it at the end of the movie, but it's really interesting that she does it from a place of weakness. So at the end of the movie, Yelena comes up to her and the last thing that she says in the movie is, "We own you now, Valentina," which I think is really, really interesting that they have leverage over Valentina based on the events of this movie.
Yeah. I think it's smart. And like you said, she was in a position of power the entire movie, the one pulling the strings. And then it sort of switches when a post Sentry versus Thunderbolts fight in the Sentry Watchtower, and then Sentry starts to have these godlike thoughts.
Delusions, perhaps.
Yes. And he literally asks Val, "Well, if I'm a god, why do I have to listen to you?" And I think from that point on, she realizes she has lost the power.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting. I think that's very true. I'm glad you mentioned Sentry, because I did want to go back to discussing the power stuff that we were talking about earlier, where he is, Sentry in the Void. We would have liked to see a little bit more of maybe his power set. That one fight scene that they have where they're all trying to take down Sentry, pretty scary stuff to see how strong.
And he wasn't even trying.
No, he wasn't trying at all. He was just standing there. It's like that meme of Super Smash Brothers where Luigi's just standing there doing nothing against level 9 CPUs and then he ends up winning. Like, it really feels like that, where Sentry just, nothing touches him, nothing hurts him. So it'll be really interesting to see how he... And it makes sense that, someone that strong, really the only enemy that he can have is himself.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. And the void aspect of it, when he becomes the full void, where he's the full sort of dark silhouette
shadow. Yeah.
Essentially. With firstly, very cool character design with just the little pin eye lights that he has. And that's really the only sort of thing that we see. And even at the end when Bob is punching Sentry, where we see his teeth, very scary imagery. Mm-hmm. especially with, like, you know, turning people into shadows the way he does, which I think Jake Schreier mentioned was influenced by the shadows of, you know, dead Japanese individuals at Hiroshima and Nagasaki from the bomb, like the nuclear bombings. So very dark imagery, very scary stuff. Definitely puts him as a real big threat if he does turn into the void again. And it's interesting that at the, in the post-credit scene, he also talks about it, that he can't really be the sentry without also inviting the void in as well.
Yeah.
So, and I think it also speaks to that point of mental health where, you know, you have the good days and you have the bad. You can't really, like, just have the good days as well sometimes. So I think it's very, very interesting place that they've left him. So it'll be interesting to see how he sort of factors into the whole Doomsday Avengers conversation.
Yeah. And I do want to make two final points. One being something I brought up to you was that this is how I feel like they should be treating Banner and the Hulk.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's, I am afraid of what's inside me. And in order for me to be my true good self, it also invites the demon inside of me to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to make a choice of not letting, you know, not letting anything out, or, you know, being the hero, but also inviting the villain. And I don't think we got enough of that really in the MCU Hulk, especially now.
Yeah.
And I think that's how they, if they were to revert Hulk and Banner to being two separate personas in the same body, I think that's how they have to go, of playing that Banner is just living on the edge, not knowing. And I think Avengers 1, we kind of get that. But I think the way Lewis Pullman did it was phenomenal. And I think they got to continue to kind of push that if they were to, you know, revert Banner back. But so that's my point on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final point I want to talk about is the inside the void itself, the shadow realm, if you will. Yes.
Yeah.
The different shame rooms, I think, was a really cool concept of showing people's different traumas that have helped, you know, caused their shame, I guess, or any sort of mental health issues.
Yeah.
And how, you know, from their perspective, a third person perspective, how they viewed it. And if they tried to stop it, they would just get thrown to the side and have to view it again and again and again and again and replaying their own trauma. So I thought that was really cool for them to figure out, you know, the only way to defeat this is to accept it and, you know, just kind of talk through it, think through it. And, you know, you just have to be at peace with it, sort of, in a way.
Yeah.
And so, again, tackles a very, very heavy subject, and I think they do it really well. And, you know, we learn a lot of Yelena's backstory that way. We learn, obviously, Bob's backstory that way. And then even Walker, too, and that's part of his redemption arc, is us seeing that, you know, post-Captain America life, it really ruined his own personal life and his relationships with his family. And so this is where I would have liked to see a little bit more from. I mean, Bucky, he makes a joke about, you know, oh yeah, my past is all good.
No problems.
Yeah. So we've obviously seen Bucky's past in several movies, but I would have liked to see more from Ghost.
Yeah.
And even Red Guardian, who we really don't know, like, what trauma he's undergone for the most. I mean, I don't even know what trauma.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. At least, you know, at least Ava or Ghost, we do know. But I would have liked to explore that a little bit more, how it's affected her, and I would have liked to know a little bit more about Red Guardian.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, there probably is some trauma there in becoming Red Guardian. Like, there's probably some trials and tribulations. I mean, the Soviet Union, historically not great people when they were trying to, you know, achieve something with human test subjects. So, you know, there's probably some interesting story there that could be told that he's masking and would maybe speak to more of his, you know, using humor as a way to deal with that. And I think that would have been interesting to see. But I think what we'd also talked about was, you know, given the pacing of this movie, which I thought you and I thought was really good and tight and effective, it didn't feel like it overstayed its welcome. I think having all of these sorts of, like, trauma exposition bits would have maybe dragged the movie down a little bit. I mean, I'm sure there's ways they could have peppered it in here and there, but I think if there was a whole section where we just got each individual Thunderbolt's backstory or like their what's sort of causing them grief is, it could have slowed the movie down a little bit. Whereas I think focusing on Florence Pugh's trauma and a little bit of John Walker's and obviously Bob's trauma works in terms of the narrative purpose of the story, because those are the most, I guess, important.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think very well stated. I'm glad we got back to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's it, Chris. I mean, do we want to give it a score at all briefly?
No. We got to wait till our actual rewatch.
Okay. But I think suffice to say, we are overall very pleased with this movie. We highly encourage you guys to check it out. If you haven't seen it yet, though, I mean, if you're sitting at this point and heard the spoiler discussion, I don't know. I guess that's a choice. But yeah, the Thunderbolts, very good movie. We are now excited, I think, about Fantastic Four. We're in the we're so back phase. Let's hope we stay that way with Marvel for a little bit more than just, you know, the ebbs and flows that we've been having. But yeah, we'll be back very soon with some more full-length episodes. And we hope to talk to you guys very soon then. But until then, I've been Ananth.
And I've been Chris.
And we'll see you guys later. Bye.